All right, I get to introduce a couple of guys where if they walked in the classroom, everybody just straightened up. That's Dr. Greg Lardy, Vice President for Ag Affairs with North Dakota State University. Always good to see you, Dr. Lardy. How you been?
I've been great, Joel. Thank you for having me today.
And who's? I'll let you introduce this this Scott Brown guy next to you.
Yeah, Scott Brown is with the University of Missouri. He's an extension ag economist there and works for an institute called FAPRI. And so that deals with farm policy, federal farm policy.
Mm-hmm. So we get to talk farm bill a little bit, but tell people about what that's all about down in Missouri.
Yeah, so the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute's been in place for decades, and really we're sitting there trying to help whether it's members of Congress or congressional staff on ag committees, as they write farm policy, what's it mean if they pull a lever and change policy in some ways? Is it what's it mean for producer prices, consumer costs, government cost? Just trying to be out there, trying to help them make better, more informed decisions, if you will, in terms of policy.
Before we get into details, I have to tell you that it's so nice to see ag institutions working with ag institutions, you know, because there's such a knowledge, but every now and then there's going to be that one thing that, hey, I didn't think of that. And of course you got the we were talking before you guys came in about in one area you got cotton, you got peanuts, you got all of this, and you got durum, and you got dairy and some of the others. And so to see the institutions working together, Dr. Brown, I think it says a lot about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we're all learning that We can't be the end-all be-all for everyone, and we need to take advantage of the opportunities or the expertise that exists in the different land grants around the country as we deal with a number of important issues related to agriculture.
So let's talk about the Farm Bill a little bit. I think most people, when they think Farm Bill, think, they're gonna put an extension. They're gonna put an extension. We got an election year coming up in 2024, so, you know, we won't fight out. Why do I get the sense now, guys, that we're actually going to get a farm bill done? Do you pick up that same pulse?
I think there's been a big change in the last few weeks as we dealt with the debt ceiling issue. We've talked a lot about some of the nutrition programs, and I think when you look back at either the 2014 or the 2018 farm bill, that debate all got held up in many ways because we were trying to separate that nutrition title and the what some would call the real farm bill. Mm-hmm. And I go, I think now with the nutrition discussion that happened with the deficit reduction side of the scenario, we now can be focused more on getting a farm bill done. So I think the probability of getting something done has increased. Now, do I think we get it to the finish line by September 30th? There's a lot of work to be done, but I think we're a lot closer than we would have thought just a month or so ago.
Yeah, and you said it well. I mean, the one thing that isn't on the table to debate how it's going to work is SNAP anymore.
That's right.
That's done. I mean, you know that.
So we may have some discussion about it, but we've really narrowed that debate, I think, in terms of what might come up in terms of nutrition programs going forward, just given the work done the last few weeks.
Let me ask you this. You know, it might be by age, it might be by orneriness, it might be by political philosophy. But a lot of my friends who are good, close friends, they get it. And some of their friends and colleagues don't. When it comes to the reason that SNAP is good, it's a good thing to have it in the Farm Bill. That there's a lot of urban congressmen and women out there. Speak to that for a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, so I think we've just seen a big change, just like we have in the country, in terms of those that understand production agriculture. And I say those members of Congress that come from with a farm background. There's less of them today than there was a few decades ago. So you're trying to build that coalition that ends up getting 218 votes on the House side and 60 votes on the Senate at the end of the day. And so I think it's important that we look at this as the overall package that's both nutrition spending and what we might think of as traditional commodity programs. I know there are some that would like to separate those. I think you try to separate those, and it's very difficult for either one of those to pass separately. Maybe nutrition has a bigger probability than traditional commodity programs. So we just have to understand the coalition that needs to be built as we think about these farm bills.
I made this argument the other day that as we go forward in the farm bill, with the fact that, you know, we're looking at SNAP not being a huge part of the discussion in terms of what it's going to do. I mean, yes, SNAP, all these other debates, but, you know, the work requirements, the age requirements, all of those type of things, that's off the table. You know, the debt ceiling debate took care of that. And so now you end up focusing more on ag policy. And when it gets to ag policy for a lot of members of Congress, and certainly the urban ones that want to focus on SNAP, it gets boring. They don't like it. And you know, I shouldn't say don't like it, but they don't want to spend a lot of time on it, which to me is good for ag, because then you don't have a lot of people hunting. You have just people saying, well, I'll get that done. I got other things to work on. And I'm curious, Dr. Brown, what you think of my theory.
Yeah. So I think we've narrowed now, right? So I often say now it's, how do we spend the remaining dollars, if you will, in building a safety net for commodity programs? Now, we yet to, so I think this is one of the big things left to decide. Do we have more money? Because I hear a lot of folks who are wanting to change programs, and many times those changes cost money. So is there going to be more money available to write this next farm bill? I'm not sure I know the answer. It looks like it there may not be. And so then, do we have commodity fighting, or do we have trying to take away from our corn producers and soybean producers, going to try to take away money from dairy producers?
Yeah.
You know, you get a different fight than I want to take money away from nutrition spending to right. put on.
It's commodity
title. Yeah.
But can I ask this with the, you know, without having a guy waiting outside the door here with a rope, should there be more money? I mean, we've had record profits in ag. You know, whenever you hear farmers saying, well, Joel, we got to talk about the inputs, that's an indicator they're making money. I mean, to me, that's a real indicator that it's not tough times on the farm. And believe me, if I stopped in Morton at the Antelope Creek tonight, I would get both barrels for having said what I just said. You know, but you know what I'm getting at. Should the people of the United States be investing more in the ag bill when, in fact, the system's working currently?
So I think the answer to that question is difficult, number one. So, yes, we've come through an incredible time, $160-plus billion net farm income in the United States in 2022. Just reminds me to say it's been a pretty good time on average across the country. There's been areas of stress, dry weather, et cetera, have made it tough for some folks. But maybe most important is, what does that safety net have to look like if these prices start to move lower? Mm-hmm. You've got crop producers who are seeing production costs that are much, much higher than they would have faced just a few years ago. And if corn and soybean prices start to work their way back down, do the safety nets that we have help them with what's could become a very tight margin situation quickly? You know, I say pork producers right now are in the midst of this, really tough right now. High feed costs, hog prices a lot lower than we would have thought just a little few months ago. Some of them saying it's as bad as it was in the late 1990s. What's the safety net that helps them get through that? I think there's a opportunity or a chance that we could get in a pretty tough economic time and stress that safety net. Now, crop insurance is it, right? So let's not overlook that. Crop insurance is right. What we've got.
You just went where I was going to go, which is there is some protections built in place now. It just ain't at the dollar amounts that they're making at the marketplace.
Yes, and is it crop insurance that we need to continue to make better to help them if we do get in a tough situation? We talk about programs like ARC and PLC. Do those reference prices for PLC need to change? Do we need to change that ARC program? That's some of the discussion that I hear coming from different places. I will just say, let's not forget crop insurance has been kind of the bedrock of what's been important for crop producers mm-hmm. for the past several years.
I had a you're going to recognize this name instantly, but a good friend, I had former Congressman Colin Peterson on, and we were talking the same type of a discussion, and he was talking about, you know, the levels. You know, I think soybeans was in the mid sevens, you know, that type of a level. And when you're making $14 on a bushel of soybeans and the price has got to drop down to under $8 before your protection kicks in, that's a huge difference. That being said, you're still making that money. And Dr. Brown, I'm going to say this, and then you stay clear of it, okay? This is the, you know, I'm a former state senator and was a minority member in a pretty red state. Somebody asked me when they thought Democrats started becoming irrelevant in the Midwest, and I said when Republicans embraced federal crop insurance. Because that used to be a fight years ago. I mean, you had the Bob Doles of the world who fought it like crazy. And once they said, all right, this is there, take place, it's working, there was nothing left for us to do in some of those areas. And I think that that safety net is that safe for some of these guys. I don't think that they have to wake up in the morning and think it's going to be 1988 and there's going to be an auction by the mailbox.
Yeah, so we're in a very different place today than we were back in the 80s for sure. And I'll say, you know, I think crop insurance looks really good, and it's a very strong safety net when prices are high. If prices start to work lower, and I'm relying on that post-harvest price guarantee, if that starts to work lower, I think some will struggle with how good a safety net crop insurance might be, but that has not been the case. It has worked really, really well for us in a period of low prices, of multi-year low prices. And if you look, if you think back to, you know, pre-COVID, so 16, 17, 2018, we were talking about lower prices. And I think there was a lot more stress out there in the crop community. We had crop insurance then, and it was working. It just maybe you had some stressful situations. Now, let me just say in the same
breath. That and the government said your land was worth way more than what it was worth.
And right? in the same breath, you know, let's just make sure. So we want an adequate safety net, but not a safety net that's too good. A safety net that's too good is not liked by production agriculture either, because that's just a period of surplus production. I always go back to the price support program in the dairy industry of the 1980s. It was too high. We were collecting all kinds of surplus products into storage by the CCC. Producers didn't like it because the price they received always set right on the price support, and you missed opportunities for higher prices. So we're getting that today with the kinds of programs that we have.
What you just described, isn't that kind of how milk works still today on some degree?
So to a certain extent, but we have the dairy margin coverage program, so a little bit different of making direct payments. It's only on a producer's first 5 million pounds of production history.
Okay.
So it doesn't cover 100% of the milk produced in the country by any stretch. It's really targeted at smaller producers. Those with 200 cows or less roughly might be fully covered under a program like that. So it is a lot different. But the point here is make a safety net that's adequate, but if it's too good, we won't like that as well. So it's a fine line one has to walk, and it changes over time. I think that's what makes writing these farm bills more and more difficult.
See, one of the things I struggle with the most with some of my urban friends is I don't think that they realize that each farm is an independent business. And it's run independently in accordance with how that owner, operator, wants it to run. And so they look at it as though it's something, what you just described. You don't want the safety net to be too good. You don't want somebody who's not good at farming to be able to make sure they can farm. If he can't get production out of the land, then having somebody who can get production out of the land is a good thing.
We want to be producing efficiently, right,
yeah,
at the end of the day. And I think that's you don't want policy to overtake what might be somebody that's not farming efficiently as they could.
Dr. Scott Brown, ladies and gentlemen, interim director of the Rural and Farm Finance Policy Analysis Center. He's at the University of Minnesota, and Dr. Greg Lardy is with us, vice president for Ag Affairs at NDSU. You know, I could do this all day, ladies and gentlemen. It's great getting a chance to meet and visit with a man like Dr. Scott Brown, interim director with the Rural and Farm Finance Policy Analysis Center, associate extension professor at the University of Missouri, and then to know the partnerships and the sharing of knowledge with Dr. Greg Lardy, vice president for Ag Affairs with NDSU. Guys, we were talking about capitalism and farming before we went to a break. Do you think people realize that each farm is its own business? I mean, Scott, do you see that? Or do you think we have to continue to educate people that, hey, this one might fail, that one won't, you know?
So I think many people don't recognize what it's like to be in production agriculture today. And individual farm to individual farm, it's different. and that's just not a recognition that most of the population in this country understands.
Yeah, I think that in my home area, just like many of the home areas that are listening to me right now, some of the best jobs that people have are in the ag sector, working for a farmer. Good pay, good benefits, good hours. There's times where you got to put in some long hours, but they'll make that up by saying, hey, I got my daughter's wedding. Goodbye. We'll see you in 4 days, kind of a thing. I think there's a real future for ag labor. I do.
Absolutely. We're short labor in almost every area of agriculture today. And I think producers are willing to pay well and provide great benefits for those folks willing to help them. And yes, it's not always an 8-to-5 job. You got to be willing to be flexible. But for those that enjoy being outside, what a great opportunity.
Okay, the little seconds I have left here. Last buck in your wallet, ag bill pass or not this year?
It will pass, but not by September 30th.
Okay, there. He bet his last dollar, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see how it turns out. Guys, thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.